This is the Linda Steele Show on demand. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and listen weekdays 3 to 6 on 980 CKNW and on the Radio Player Canada app.
Hey, good afternoon. There is great anticipation as we're waiting for Dr. Bonnie Henry to begin her daily news conference. You don't want to miss this because we're anticipating some major new restrictions and new health orders that are going to pretty much impact every single person who lives in this province.
I'm excited and nervous to find out what's going to be announced.
There's been a bunch of rumors.
I have big hopes for what they might announce.
Well, first of all, we need to know, what are the COVID numbers? Yeah. Are they going to come down?
Of course.
There have been rumors. People reached out to me yesterday saying, we're hearing that there might be something in regards to places of worship. What's happening? What do you know?
Yeah.
And I'm saying, well, we don't know anything just yet, but we're going to learn something in literally the next minute or so. Dr. Bonnie Henry is almost never this late with her news conference. But I know there's a lot to unpack today. And I know that we've had restrictions that were introduced a couple of weeks ago or, you know, thereabouts that have impacted people in Vancouver Coastal Health and the Fraser Health Region. We were getting hints from the premier yesterday that we might be seeing stuff like travel bans that would go right throughout the province. I know friends of mine who work in the fitness industry are on tenterhooks wondering, hang on, folks. It looks like Dr. Bonnie is about to speak, but we are going to hear again today some significant new health orders. We will let you listen in. This is Adrian Dix, the health minister, is just about to introduce Dr. Bonnie Henry. We will take you to that news conference now.
First Nations, tomorrow, Friday, at around 3 o'clock, we'll be providing a written briefing with relevant information about COVID cases in British Columbia. On Monday, we'll be back here in Victoria in the Press Gallery Theatre briefing. Dr. Henry and I will be at 3 o'clock. And with that, it's my honour to introduce Dr. Bonnie Henry.
Thank you very much and good afternoon. So for today, I want to report a total of 538 new cases of COVID-19 in British Columbia, including 9 epidemiologically linked cases, bringing our total to 24,960 people in British Columbia with COVID-19. The new cases by health authority, 178, are in the Vancouver Coastal Health Region, 309 people are in the Fraser Health Region, 12 people reside in the Vancouver Island Health Region, 28 people in the Interior Health Region, and 11 people are from the Northern Health Region. We now have 6,929 active cases of COVID-19 in the province in all of our health authorities, of whom 217 are in hospital, 59 of whom are in critical care or ICU. We have had, sadly, one additional death in the last 24 hours, bringing the number of people in British Columbia who've died from COVID-19 to 321. As always, we send our deep condolences and to the family, to the care providers of this person, one of our seniors who we've lost from long-term care. We now have 9,929 people under active public health monitoring across the province and 17,207 people who have recovered from COVID-19. We have 6 new healthcare outbreaks to report and no new ones that have been declared over, bringing our total to 59 active outbreaks in our healthcare system, 41 in long-term care or assisted living, and 40 in long-term care and assisted living and 19 in acute care. We also have an additional outbreak in a community to report, and this is at the Fluor BC LNG joint venture, a contracted site of the LNG Canada plant and project in Kitimat, where we have a number of workers at that site who have tested positive for COVID-19, and the investigation with Northern Health and the owners and contractor of that facility are ongoing. So today, as is no surprise to anybody, we are in our second surge, and it is proving to be a challenge. why we all hoped that we would not experience a second wave based on what has been happening around the world, around this country, and around our province. We anticipated that this may occur. We knew that every pandemic that we've ever had has had more than one wave. And this has been proving to us and to people around the globe that this is a challenging virus to deal with. Despite where we may be today, I remain confident and I know we will get through this. But we need to take more action now. COVID-19 is a virus that is proving to be a long road, this pandemic, and this is the road that we must travel. It will have bumps and will have challenges, and we are facing them today. As we know, we have seen a significant rise in new cases, hospitalizations, and tragically, deaths. 4 weeks ago, we had about 175 cases a day, and I was anxious then. Yesterday, we had over 700 people in our province affected, and we know that our hospitals are getting stretched. Our ICU capacity is getting stretched. Our communities are suffering. We also know that as more people are infected, the risk of somebody younger and others becoming having severe illness or dying are greater. And tragically, this past week, we had a young person in his 30s who died from COVID-19. This is a reminder to all of us that this virus can have tragic effects on the people we are closest to and the people we love. We also have over 50 active outbreaks in our healthcare system. We have seen that transmission has happened sometimes in social events in our communities, and it's spilled over into our long-term care homes and our hospitals. This increase has been most acute, as we know, in the Vancouver Coastal and Fraser Health regions of the province, and that is why I put in regional orders about 10 days ago. However, as we've been watching so carefully over the last few weeks, it has become apparent that this surge in transmission is happening across the province. We are now seeing increased activity in terms of community transmission, outbreaks, and effects on our healthcare system in every health authority in the province. So now we need to do more. We need to keep our essential service, our essential activities open and operating safely. We need to keep our schools open and operating safely, and our workplaces that can be open safely, open. And we need to relieve the stress on our healthcare system right now. Right now, we are holding our own, but we know that if people cannot access healthcare, that it is not only people with COVID-19, but people with other urgent health issues that will suffer. And we need to do this across the province. As a result, I am extending the regional orders that currently apply to the Fraser and Vancouver Health Region across the entire province. And I'm putting new province-wide orders in place. These expanded orders will come into effect today and run until starting with a two-week period. That's the period of the incubation period. And we will be extending the orders from November 23rd so that the orders across the province will be in place until December 7th at midnight. We want to ensure we get through 1 to 2 incubation periods, and we will be reviewing our progress regularly as we move through this next 2 weeks. We want to see a clear and notable difference and slowing of transmission in our province, across the province, so that we can get back into that balance, that control that we had with public health. So, what does this mean? This means that the orders with regards to our social gatherings apply to the entire province. Right now, we at home need to only socialize with our immediate households. We need to delay inviting over friends and family for this period of time and reduce our social interactions as much as possible outside of our homes. As a result, I'm ordering that there'll be no social gatherings of any size with anyone other than your immediate household. This applies in our homes, vacation rentals, and in the community, and in public venues, including those with less than 50 people in controlled settings. Your immediate household can, of course, include roommates, and if you live on your own, you can visit with up to one or two people if you regularly spend time with them. We need to go back to what we were doing in April and May and March when we had our pandemic bubble. And so if you are somebody who lives alone, that's that one or two people that you have a close relationship with. All indoor and outdoor events, as defined in my gathering and events order, are not allowed to take place until further notice. So that goes back, and that's a bit of a technical language. The mass gathering and events order is on the website, and it refers to the restrictions and limits. The maximum number of people we could have in an event was 50, and these events could take place in many different places. Those are now suspended across the province for the next 2 weeks. While places of worship are to have no in-person groups services for this period of time, I've had the privilege of meeting with a large number of faith leaders from around the province, and this is important. And they understand that we need our faith services more than ever right now, but we need to do them in a way that's safe. And with the community transmission that we're seeing, and the fact that we have seen transmission in some of our faith-based settings, we need to suspend those and support each other and find those ways to care for each other remotely. The exceptions will be those important events, funerals and weddings and ceremonies such as baptisms, which may proceed in a limited way with a maximum of 10 people, including the officiant. There are to be no associated receptions inside or outside your home or at any public or community-based venue associated with these important celebrations. The exceptions do include other activities that happen with COVID safety plans in some in these gathering sites, including medical group sessions, sessions like NA and AA meetings with a maximum of 50 people, less if the space is smaller, and ensuring that you have COVID-19 safety plans that are in place and are being acted upon. It also does not apply to those very important work functions that we have. What we are talking about is reducing our social activities, both in our home and outside our home and around our work periods. So if I work in the social services and I need to check on families, this does not apply to that situation. As well, if we have people who are doing work in our house, people who are our grandparents are coming to pick up children, those are not social gatherings. Those are essential functions that happen in and out of our home. And so those are not affected by this order. I have for many, many weeks made clear the importance of wearing masks, particularly now, as one of the measures that we have that can prevent transmission, along with those important things that we know work, like physical distancing, cleaning our hands, and staying away from others when we're not feeling well. But based on continued requests, particularly from the retail and other public sectors, to have more explicit direction for the use of masks in indoor, public, and retail spaces, I've asked the Minister of Public Safety and the Solicitor General to issue a requirement for the wearing of masks for all indoor, public, and retail spaces for staff and customers, except where eating or drinking. This means if you are at work, at your desk, you do not need to wear a mask. But if you are in a shared workspace, a common space, or a public space like elevators, hallways, and other common areas, you do. If you are behind service counters and you have plexiglass between you and everyone else, you do not need to wear a mask unless there are others back there with you. If you are serving customers, you do need to wear a mask. If you are in a restaurant, you need to wear a mask when you are not at your table. That includes coming into the restaurant, leaving the restaurant, going to the washroom. And staff must wear masks when they're interacting with others and with other staff and with the tables. Again, this does not apply to anyone who is unable to put on or remove the mask on their own. We know that there are people with certain conditions and disabilities in some ways that would make mask wearing challenging. It does not apply to children under the age of 2. And we need to be aware that some people's disabilities or inability to wear a mask may not be readily apparent to people. This will mean, this will mean mandatory wearing of masks in all indoor public and retail spaces, not only as a workplace health and safety issue, as one of the mandates that we have had, but also to ensure that owners and operators of these spaces have the support behind them to ensure that customers are aware of this mandate as well. The use of the Emergency Act to do this will enable us to cover that overlap of workplace and public safety around this issue. As I announced last week, we need to understand and better manage and control indoor group physical activities where we have seen transmission happen. We've seen notable levels of transmission, and there are some particular activities that are higher risk. I have tasked a group to look at this issue over the past 10 days. And as of today, I am ordering that all businesses, recreation centers, or other organizations that organize or operate indoor group physical activities that include spin classes, hot yoga, and high-intensity interval training must stop until further notice. All other group fitness activities indoors can continue to operate, but they must adhere to the updated guidance that we are developing. So this is a change from what we put in place last week for the Lower Mainland. It gave us an opportunity to, once we recognized that there was transmission happening in some of these settings, we took the opportunity to stop those, to put a pause so we could understand the conditions that made these more risky in some situations and others. So what we have determined that it is a combination, and this is what we're learning over time. It's those closed environments where we have people close together, where we're exerting and when we have poorer ventilation and when there's often loud music. Those are the settings that are most at risk, and we are seeing around the world that those are challenging settings, and they invite this virus to spread. And we know that at this time of year, when we know the virus is spreading faster in the climate that we have right now, and the higher rates in our community, that these high-risk activities cannot happen for the foreseeable future. So that is the focus that we are looking at right now. We had included other indoor group fitness activities like dance, like some of the lower intensity fitness classes, and we will be updating the guidance on how those can operate safely, including additional space, reduced numbers, making sure that people have book ahead, for example, and have the same class with the same people at the same time. So there's a number of new guidelines that are being finalized and will be posted. Last week, I made the requirement that people had to adhere to the updated guidance and had to have their new plans approved by their local MHO before they could restart these activities. That is no longer the case. We have narrowed down those activities that we feel are too high risk to happen right now, and those will be suspended. All other indoor group activities must, as we've had in the past, must update their COVID safety plans to adhere to the new guidelines and have those publicly posted. And they are, however, placed on our watch list, and we will be watching carefully because we know even some of these lower risk activities, if they're not, these plans are not followed intensely, that we can have transmission. And we will be monitoring this, and we will be shutting down gyms or studios where these safety plans are not being followed. There were, I understand, a small number of these facilities that may have included some of these high-risk activities that had received a notice from Vancouver Coastal Health. That notice will be rescinded. If you have any of these high-risk activities, so spin classes, hot yoga, high-intensity interval training, those are not approved right now. For all sports, the other issue that we talked about in 10 days ago was about reducing contact sports indoors, and we have looked again at the measures and the risks that are associated with ongoing sporting activities. We also recognize how important it is, particularly for youth, but for adults as well, to have the opportunities to engage in these sporting activities in a safe way during this pandemic.
You're listening to Provincial Health Officer Dr. Bonnie Henry and a whole new raft of restrictions and health orders. Let's go to Diana in Langley. What do you think about the mask mandate?
Nice to talk to you. I am completely concur with everything that Dr. Bonnie Henry has said, especially the retail point of view since I worked there. And prior to masks being used as much as they were, when the plexiglass first went up, even though it was cleaned constantly, the residue which was on there coming emanating from people's noses and mouths was unconscionable. Mm. This is what forced me to wear a mask when I saw what I was breathing in. So kudos to her, and I'm glad that it's gone through. And especially now you combine COVID with the flu, and I think this would be better for everybody.
I agree. Thank you so much, Diana. Jamie in Vancouver, what do you think?
I think you guys aren't understanding the difference between law and order. None of this is law. All of these are orders, and the orders themselves are unlawful.
How
now, you may
so?
Say they're legal.
How is this unlawful? So I assume that you disagree with...
No law has been passed.
I assume you disagree with the idea of her mandating masks.
It's not just that. Every action that has been taken in the wake...
Oh, all right. Well, that's a shame because
dang.
I wanted to have a little bit of a conversation with him.
I was looking forward to that, Linda. Dang.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next one then. Okay. We're going to talk to Ken in Abbotsford. Ken, what do you think about what you're hearing today?
Well, I say finally we got over these battles and hurdles to get into the more tough spot from our authorities. Thank God. But we're here in the here and now and we're going forward. I'm happy with it. Hopefully things just keep getting better. But one thing I would like to say in all this, we don't need John Horgan, the politician, our leader, throwing a wrench into things with his premature, irresponsible statement saying kids aren't transmitters, to just come out that is a definitive scientific written in stone to him.
Well, no, hang
when
on a second,
not,
because
that
Dr.
is ridiculous.
Hang on.
No.
Dr. Bonnie Henry.
That is ridiculous.
All right, thanks for that, Ken. Dr. Bonnie Henry, Eric, came out today. I listened to her embargoed news conference earlier, and she said they've gone to the schools. They have not seen transmission in the schools.
That's
however,
right.
They know that people, I mean, they have seen some transmission.
Right, it's small amounts, though,
but
yes.
But they know that people are super concerned, so what they're going to be doing is they are going to create... a group, a lower mainland team.
That's it.
That will quickly go in, ID cases, manage the exposures and the outbreaks, and make sure they get on the communications ASAP.
I love
another fine day of music, courtesy of Amira Lee. We're talking about the new health restrictions and orders that were mandated today by Dr. Bonnie Henry. One of the big ones is that she now finally is saying that masks are mandatory in all indoor public places. What does that really mean?
If you are at work, at your desk, you do not need to wear a mask. But if you are in a shared workspace, a common space, or a public space like elevators, hallways, and other common areas, you do. If you are behind service counters and you have plexiglass between you and everyone else, you do not need to wear a mask unless there are others back there with you. If you are serving customers, you do need to wear a mask. If you are in a restaurant, you need to wear a mask when you are not at your table. That includes coming into the restaurant, leaving the restaurant, going to the washroom. And staff must wear masks when they're interacting with others and with other staff and with the tables.
All right, a lot to unpack there. So let's bring in the political panel, Stephen Smart, the Western Canada GM for Hill & Knowlton Strategies. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, hello.
And Mo Amir, host of This is VanColor and CKNW editorialist. Good afternoon, Mo.
Hey, Linda, and thanks for having me on with my friend Stephen.
Very happy to have you both.
We've been lobbying for this for a while.
Well, there you go. You're both amazing, so we're happy to have you. Stephen, I'm going to start with you. What do you make of the mandatory masks? Finally, she resisted that for the longest time.
Yeah, and you know, clearly it was the right move. Clearly it was what people were calling for. It was interesting talking to a couple of reporters in the technical briefing today about sort of a bit of amusement in terms of listening to Dr. Bonnie do a bit of a 180 on her previous position. I think, this clearly is the evolution of this. And, you know, when enough people are calling for it, I think you have to do it. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if it makes a difference, but I think there's something symbolic about it. I think, you know, you have all sorts of people who've been doing this for a while already, but clearly given the numbers, there's a segment of the population that wasn't. And even if this order gets a few more people on board and helps stop a few more infections, given the domino effect of those, then it will be entirely worthwhile.
Indeed. Mo, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that a mask mandate will get more people to wear masks. And we all know that when you have that critical mass of mask wearers, that will slow down the transmission of COVID-19. So this is a good thing, setting aside the confusion from earlier this week with her op-ed. I do think that today what we got was a clearer vision for what life looks like under the pandemic as we try to flatten the curve from all these rising numbers. A lot of that ambiguity that we previously lived under is now very much gone. Dr. Henry is clearly targeting certain aspects of life, particularly private social gatherings. This is probably the most stringent and most clear we've heard her on with regards to these gatherings, especially when it comes to indoor fitness and faith-based gatherings. And Dr. Henry, at the same time, has also pointed out to other businesses that have done well. So she did point out to shops and salons and hairdressers for having those work plans in place and how it's worked really well there. So I felt, as just a regular person, that I was a lot more clear on what the guidelines look like, what's safe, what isn't safe, and what I should be doing.
And Stephen, here's the thing, though. Teachers are going to go, she did not say that there needed to be mandatory masks in the classroom. And the reason for that is she says they are not open. She's talking about schools, not open in public areas where people can walk in. Teachers are not going to like this.
Yeah, they're not. And I already saw a tweet from the BCTF essentially saying exactly that and you know, urging their members, urging teachers to sort of create a culture of mask wearing in schools. It's interesting. You know, I've said before, I have a daughter in preschool. I have a daughter in grade two. And so in grade two, they do not need to wear a mask. Their teacher does. My sister is a high school teacher, and she is very determined to have as many people in her classrooms wearing masks as much as possible. So, it may be that we're going there. I guess I still fall back on sort of a faith in science and faith in Dr. Bonnie, that she is looking and the professionals around her are looking at the numbers, looking where the transmissions are taking place and making those evidence-based decisions. So, you know, we know that there have been a lot of sort of family-related transmissions. Clearly, the order today, you know, to Mo's point, there was a lot of ambiguity before. We've been dealing with it in our own family, sort of, you know, discussions with sort of parents being like, well, Dr. Bonnie said this, and then interpreting it differently. And, you know, looking at the orders from her today, and the BC government website lays this out very well, in black and white, no social gatherings of any size with anyone other than your household. So it does provide that clarity a bit more.
Mo, I'll get your thoughts in a second, but I want to play a little bit of audio from Dr. Bonnie Henry explaining why she's not mandating masks in schools.
Schools are not public open spaces. You cannot go walk into a school. We have layers of measures of protection in place in schools. And like I wouldn't wear a mask sitting at my office, We don't expect children to wear masks sitting at their desks all day long. We do have expectations in schools around those common areas where children and adults in the school setting are mingling, and those are part of the safety plans that are in place in all of the schools.
Mo, given all the number of school exposures, and we had four schools shut down because of COVID just in this past week, do you think that's enough? I mean, why not just go all the way?
If I was a teacher, no, it would not be enough. And I think we're starting to recognize how underappreciated teachers are, especially in a pandemic. Again, I don't have children. I don't have any links to the school system. So for me, what I saw today was great. I think obviously if you have kids, if you are a teacher yourself, there's still a lot to worry about and a lot that is ambiguous.
And you know what? It is a moving target. But Stephen, overall, how do you think health officials in this province have handled the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, putting it into phases, I mean, clearly our initial response was really good. The numbers came down. They are pivoting here. It's easy to armchair quarterback this and look at it and say, you know, we've now had, high numbers for the past couple of weeks. Why didn't they act a bit sooner? But you say that and you say, okay, well, this generally has about a 2-week lag time. So we're seeing kind of now the cases from approximately 2 weeks ago. So I don't think there's a huge amount of value in armchair quarterbacking. What I do think we all need to do, and I don't mean to sound preachy, but is just to live it every day in our own kind of families, our own bubbles. That's what we have control over. My daughter had her 7th birthday yesterday and couldn't do anything with friends. You know, she missed out on that. And, you know, we've all got Christmas coming up or Hanukkah or different holidays. Like, we're all going to have to make those tough decisions. And to me, I think that is a more useful part of our focus is focusing on what we can do ourselves versus worrying about that bigger picture.
Yeah, but Mo, there was a distinct turn where in the beginning, everybody was afraid. They were looking to Dr. Bonnie Henry for guidance. They revered her, put on a pedestal, monuments to her. And then people started to get angry. She's not tough enough. She should be bringing the hammer down. If you had to give Dr. Bonnie Henry a letter grade, what would it be?
Oh, I would still give her an A+. And here's the reason why. We cannot be hypercritical of our public health officials. They are still the experts. We know that in the past, you know, Dr. Bonnie Henry received death threats. We understand that there is a frustration throughout the province. And as much as this can be a science, there is a debate on things like feasibility and effectiveness and costs of certain mandates. And it is the job of the government, and of course the apolitical government where Dr. Bonnie Henry falls under, to communicate with the public the course of action. I think she's been great in doing that. It is a very tough time. It's tough to navigate. And, you know, there is no textbook solution to how you solve this thing. So I would still give her an A+. I think it's good to ask questions, but we should caution ourselves from being too critical.
Love that song. We're talking to the political panel. Today it's Mo Amir, host of This Is Vancouver, and Stephen Smart, Western Canada GM for Hill & Knowlton Strategies. Guys, John Horgan has got himself a huge group of really strong people in his caucus, and he's going to have some big decisions to make about who to put in cabinet. Mo, have you got any predictions?
Well, he has 7 positions open, and he has some new stars like Nathan Cullen and Murray Rankin, and he also has some sophomore returnees who are high profile, I would say, Bowen Ma, Ravi Kalon. They got to fit in somewhere. In terms of who's going where, I'm really not the guy to say. I think Stephen has a better idea.
Well, Stephen, let's hear it.
Yeah, the good news is the NDP won a strong majority. The bad news is the NDP won a strong majority, and John Horgan now needs to find a meaningful role for each of those 56 people, not including himself. You know, I often say one of the most revealing things that I found about working in government, Linda, was actually how sort of simplistic it is in some ways. Like, literally, that is 56 people in addition to him that he needs to find a meaningful role for. And it's not just about vanity, although maybe there's a little bit of that. They all come with strengths. They all, you know, want to be useful and want to be involved. And it is no good for a leader to have people sitting idle that are sitting there sort of stewing, thinking they should have had more to do. So a few key things, though, just quickly to look for. Very interested who they put into finance. You know, Carol James didn't run again. You also have the former deputy minister of finance, Lori Wanamaker, who's now taking over as the deputy minister to the premier. So those are two really key roles. I've heard Selena Robinson's name talked about quite a bit for that role. I think she would be great in it. Also as deputy premier. Also, what happens in education? What happens then in housing? And what happens in attorney general? Does David Eby go back in there and lots of new faces that they can put in. So it'll be interesting to see on next Thursday, on the 26th.
It'll be fascinating. We know that the province is looking at, I believe, $12 billion deficit, 13. I mean, we're in a pandemic. So we have the throne speech coming in early December. And Mo, do you think we're going to see a government that is going to just continue to focus on spending right now, given the fact that we're nowhere near being through this pandemic?
I think in the short term, absolutely. I think the premier has to get out that $1,000 COVID check to families before Christmas, period. They should get work. They should get people working overtime. There are no excuses. That has to be done. People are struggling. I think there is going to be more economic hardship until we get a vaccine, until things start to get back to normal. There is going to be more spending. I think when we look at the roles that people are taking and going back to cabinet, one role that Premier Horgan has to step up in is the role of the motivational, almost spiritual leader to boost morale. He's good with Dr. Henry and Adrian Dix providing the operational leadership and communicating to the public in general, but I think the Premier now, it really does rest on his shoulders to communicate to British Columbians that the government is doing all that it can. These are very dark and very tough times, but we have to be in this together, and we all need to do our part in order to make sure we get through this.
Well, Stephen, go ahead.
Sorry. No, sorry. I was just going to say, in addition to that, though, now is the time where he needs to reassure, business owners, small business, other people who maybe voted for the other team, how he's going to look out for them. I mean, you know, in many ways, the public health response, and I'm not minimizing it because it was, it was miraculous in some ways, is sort of the easy work done by experts. Now they have to figure out economic recovery and how to set the stage for that. And that's going to be very tough, and there is no way that they are going to make everybody happy. So that is really a tough task ahead of them in setting the stage for that.
Right. And who's going to pay? We will wait and see. Listen, Mo Muir and Stephen Smart, great to have you guys on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Mo.
I'm really digging this music. Amir, thank you so much.
Me too.
Are you really?
I don't mind.
It's amazing.
I know. I've been telling Amir for a long time, play more country music.
Why not? I love country music. Yeah. You know what? It feels like it was about months ago, but you remember when everybody was losing their mind about this climate emergency action plan City of Vancouver was looking at?
I was one of them. I had a hot take when it first came out. I lost everything. I was throwing things in. I was like, no, are you kidding me? No. Yeah, but I've changed my mind since.
The original report was 370 pages, and so it was dense, and it was hard to tell what was in it, but the one thing that leapt off the page was the fact that the City of Vancouver was looking at tolling every road that goes into the Metro core.
Every single one, yep.
This plan, they need to find $500 million to implement it, which is an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
When the mayor was going, we're broke, we're in the red,
Right, yeah.
So I'm, not sure where they're going to get the money.
Yeah, yeah.
But we didn't know a lot about this toll idea. How was that going to work? And then we thought, well, maybe this is pie in the sky and the councillors are going to say, we'll shelve that. We're in a pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
No, they passed it. And so I have so many questions.
Yes.
And luckily, the guy who has actually drafted the report for the city is joining us now. Matt Horn is the City of Vancouver's climate policy manager, the main author of this climate emergency action plan. Matt, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
All right. I'm excited to find out more about this. So I want to start with the most contentious part, the one everybody's talking about, this idea of tolling all vehicles entering the Metro core. How would that potentially work?
Yeah, it's taken a lot of the discussion. It's been a bit of a challenge. I think there's been some misinformation that's sort of coming to Vancouver tomorrow. So there's a lot of work that we have to do to sort of figure out those details. And the proposal is we'd work towards implementation in 2025. And the honest answer is right now we don't know exactly how it would work. We've looked at evidence in other jurisdictions and see it working really well to manage congestion and reduce pollution. What exactly would be the best system in Vancouver is the work that has to happen over the next couple of years.
Of course, you know, many motorists already outraged about the idea, feeling like they're already suffering the financial pinch of living in one of the most expensive cities in the world, and they call it a tax grab.
Yeah, we've heard that for sure, and I think council heard pretty clearly the concern from residents and concerns from businesses around the proposal. I think where they've given us clear direction is to move forward with the proposal and really try to better understand those concerns and come up with a system that does the best job we can to meet resident and business needs. I think we've also heard sort of concerns and support for the plan where people really do want us to wrestle with climate change, and this is one of the big sources of emissions locally, and based on evidence in other jurisdictions, it's one of the ways we can tackle the problem.
Well, motorists' concern is just, hey, this is going to cost me a bunch of money. They don't know how much. They don't know how much the tolls are going to be, and I guess you don't really know either.
No, we don't know exactly how much yet. That'll be part of the work going forward. Two other things I think worth mentioning. So a big part of the plan is improving walking, rolling, cycling, and transit options so that for people where that is an option, those become safer and more viable for people. And I recognize that's not going to be an option for everybody, but the other benefit we've seen from transport pricing in other jurisdictions is that for people that do need to drive, you get faster and more reliable travel times. So there's a benefit that comes with the system for drivers as well.
Yeah, we do know that many people are going to have to drive. We've got downtown businesses upset. Even the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade said, listen, 6,500 businesses have already closed because of the pandemic. And Bridget Anderson said, now's the time to focus on economic survival, not the City of Vancouver's, quote, go-it-alone plan to increase cost to enter downtown. So business is not happy about this.
No, I think that's a fair summary. Businesses like the Greater Vancouver Board of Trade, Downtown Business Association, were pretty clear in their concerns about the proposal. And again, I think council heard those and directing us to do really strong engagement with that business community. I think it is important to emphasize that there is a long ramp on this. So we're not recommending this be implemented tomorrow. There's a whole bunch of questions to work through and to understand those concerns and try to figure out how we can address them. And we'd have 5 years to do that.
Yeah, I know that one of the concerns is for people on the North Shore, motorists there who would have to pay a toll coming over using the Lionsgate, would then dodge using that bridge, causing a big traffic jam rush to the Second Narrows. What are your thoughts on that?
The same idea I think came up from Councillor Fry in the discussion and debate at council. And I think there's been some preliminary analysis on that through the Mobility Pricing Commission a couple of years ago. And I think it's, again, another sort of important question we'll have to look at as part of this work. And I know it's frustrating for some people. We don't have answers for this, but we also wanted to put forward the concept in a preliminary way before all those answers were figured out.
The mayor admits that the city doesn't even have the legal authority to impose tolls, that it has to have the province's blessings. But we know the Horgan government got elected in part by removing tolls. So isn't that going to be a tough sell?
Maybe two parts on there to unpack. So the work plan we put forward in the Climate Emergency Action Plan says we want to look at a variety of models for transport pricing. Some of those we think we would have the jurisdiction under the Vancouver Charter to do. Others would likely need a change in the Vancouver Charter from the provincial government. So we're committed to sort of exploring a variety of options in there to figure out which could work best for Vancouver. The premier he's on record in the election campaign expressing concern around the general idea and their sort of removing, or that when they did remove tolls. I think for us to be successful, we're going to have to work with the province and with the Mayor's Council and with TransLink to, again, find a system that addresses those concerns, particularly around affordability and equity.
But I believe it's about $500 million that you need to raise to make this plan a reality. And wouldn't a lot of that money come from tolls? So if the tolls were, if that was something you were unable to do, where would you get the money from?
No, that's not quite correct. So the $500 million is correct. That's what we think is needed to pay for the investments we put forward in the plan over the next 5 years. Transport pricing wouldn't come into place until 2025. So the $500 million would be paid for by a number of other investment streams that are put forward in the plan. So some of that's coming from the existing capital plan. Some of it would come from the city's next capital plan. We've also put forward recommendations on parking permits, which would be part of that. It also talks about continuing to apply for grants from provincial and federal government, which the city has had a reasonable degree of success on over the last couple of years.
A lot of people, some mayors as well in the region, are saying, why not wait for our regional mobility pricing plan so that it's not hurting Vancouver motorists and businesses specifically?
Yeah, I think everyone that supports the concept of mobility pricing or transport pricing, I think there's a strong consensus that a regional system is where we would want to get to eventually. I think from the city's perspective and where council landed on in their amendments to the Climate Emergency Action Plan, agreed that the best path towards that is to start in a Vancouver testbed type of approach. And when we've looked at other cities around the world that have implemented transport pricing, they've all started at sort of a smaller urban core and then been able to expand to a broader basis. We haven't seen any systems that have started from day one at sort of a broad regional system.
So tell me why, in a nutshell, you think that this is a good plan.
Well, speaking of the overall plan, council, I mean, rightly recognized the climate emergency and asked us to do more to accelerate our work. We think the actions we put forward, including transport pricing, put us on track for the targets they've set for us, which would, I think, be pretty equivalent to our fair share in battling the climate crisis. We put forward what the costs are, and council is given us approval to move forward with that roadmap. There's definitely a whole bunch of milestones we'll have to continue to work through and continue to work with residents and businesses on, but that's the roadmap we're going to be moving forward with now based on their approval.
Well, Matt Horn, I wish we could talk about this for a half an hour because there's so much in the plan, but I do appreciate getting at least a little bit of insight. So thank you for talking to us.
No, not a problem. Anytime.
Matt Horn, the City of Vancouver's Climate Policy Manager. So what I got from that, Eric, was that... Mm-hmm. They don't really know.
Right. It's funny. Me too, Linda. Yeah.
How much are the tolls? We don't know.
We don't know.
How are you going to do it? We're not sure.
We don't know. We'll think of something.
What if the province says no? Well, I'm not sure about that. So this is the beginning of a process. And yes. To his credit, what he's saying is, listen, this is not happening tomorrow.
That's right.
This is, you know, going to happen, you know, if it happens at all.
Yeah, right.
2025. Yeah, so we're looking sometime in the next 5 years. But still, I mean, what concerned me is that the city has to come up with $500 million. A half a billion? Where are they going to get a half a billion dollars from?
I feel like with all the loans and the money, there's no money left to even borrow nowadays because it's all been borrowed. I have no idea, Linda, where we're going to even think about that.
They must have a plan. I'm sitting here as a, and property taxes next year are going to be 500%.
Yeah, right.
I want to open the phones on this because it impacts everybody.
Yep.
Because even if you don't drive, you're going to pay increased trickle-down costs if you have, you know, somebody come to do some renos in the house. They're like, oh,
right.
I'm paying tolls.
Oh.
I'm going to pass that on to you. So 604-280-9898. Matt Horn said, you know what? Sure, they've heard the arguments and the people are not happy about it. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's already a petition out on change.org.
Oh, is there?
That's got 3,800 signatures saying revoke the road tolls. All right, we got some details from the guy who wrote that climate emergency action plan for the city that at its sort of key thing that everybody's worried about is the tolls into Metro downtown Vancouver, which you'd pretty much have to pay to get in anywhere.
And I'm just thinking, I'm just going over to my head and I asked Amir off air, I'm like, I think I'll have to be paying a toll to come into work. I ride my bike,
on a bicycle.
What about transit? Transit's
no.
on the road.
No.
Will they up the fares?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it easier for people to get around without a car. So
yeah,
I doubt that. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I'm just not sure. Yeah. There's so much we don't know. Phil in North Vancouver, what do you think? What did you think about the interview?
Well, like you guys, I think it's a half-baked idea. I'm so disappointed with the current council. Like, I thought Gregor and Vision were out of touch. These guys just don't get it. I mean, Kenny Stewart goes in front of the media and grovels for money. And this is the third time in the last little while that he's had a spending money we don't have, whether it's furniture, whether it's raises. Now we're talking $500 million. I think you quoted him on this new thing. But where is the accounting for the electric car? Why aren't we pushing that? If climate is the true problem here, why aren't we going in that direction, pushing that rather than just basing it on fossil fuel cars? And I think, once again, this is a tax grab. I think this is money generating beyond the true thing. And I think this is a guise for Kennedy. Once again, he's broke. The city is not in a good financial shape. Compare us to Burnaby. What rough shape we are compared to Burnaby. And why is that?
Well,
because Vision Vancouver and all these other ones have just been blowing money. And here is Kennedy right back at it again. And
remember, it's not just the mayor. And Phil, thank you for calling in. I mean, the entire council voted on this. I'm sure the mayor supports it, but he's not the person who's going, yes, we're doing this. I mean, the entire council says this is a good idea to look at. And they say all other cities are going to be doing the same thing. I'm not defending it. I'm just saying the mayor's not the only person who did it. Glenn in Maple Ridge, what do you think?
Well, first and foremost, I'm now referring to Vancouver as La La Land North. This council and the mayor are truly taking advantage of the new cannabis laws, because what they're talking is crazy. They need $500 million. I don't know where they're going to get that from. Secondly, as your first caller there was just saying here, they're not taking into it. They're calling it a climate emergency, yet electric vehicles are taking over more and more, and more and more people are taking advantage of them. So if there's no carbon emissions as the cars and more cars become electrified.
Well, it's not just cars that, I hear you, Glenn. Thanks. It's not just cars that emit, problems into the environment. That was an awkward way of saying it.
Yeah,
but
I understood
it's just,
you, though.
It's not just cars that have emissions. It's also, there's going to be home retrofits, and you're not going to be using the regular kind of natural gas and that sort of thing. So there's more to it than that. And by the way, if you're driving an electric car, you'll pay less with these parking permits, because if you drive a gas guzzler, you're going to have to pay more.
Right. But I do get what they're trying to do. And, you know, cars idle when they're downtown. So I understand it, but it just doesn't seem
right. Cars idle everywhere.
Well, that's it. I'm saying, and it just doesn't seem like it's the right way to go about this. The one before, he mentioned, you know, this isn't the focus. We just need to broaden it out. I don't know what the solution is, but this doesn't feel like
Maybe it's just a beginning talking point that's aspirational.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Like we got it. We're talking about the environment. So, I mean, it is affecting us and we're having the conversation. So it's working in that way, if that's the point.
Indeed. And we need to know more.
Yeah.
I 100%. Didn't learn a ton there, but no. I don't think they know yet.
That's just.
So stay tuned on that front.
The Linda Steele Show continues on 980 CKNW.
I saw her in a courtroom in Abbotsford, where she defends people that need some help from a lawyer, a DUI lawyer. She'll probably win your court case, but not for free. And unless my lawyer's present, don't talk to me. Her name is Kyla, K-Y-L-A, Kyla, K-K-K-K-Kyla.
Eric's doing air drums in there. That was lovely.
That was fun to make.
Well, you know what? You only make intros for our very special
guest.
That's
right. You have to be a very, very special guest.
And we have a very special guest. The one, the only, Kyla Lee, who is a lawyer at Acumen Law. Hi, Kyla. What did you think about that?
I love it. It made my day.
New ringtone.
Yeah.
Hey. The reason we have Kyla on is because Kyla was tweeting, I guess yesterday, about how sad she was when she heard that there was going to be some travel restrictions announced today, which in fact they did do. We heard from Dr. Bonnie Henry today saying because of these COVID numbers, no non-essential travel in BC. That means anything recreational, anything social for at least 2 weeks. This order would end, I believe, December 7th at midnight, but they're saying this can be extended. Kyla, what made you so sad when you heard they were going to do travel restrictions?
All of my family are on Vancouver Island. And so without the ability to travel, if these restrictions get extended, I won't be able to go home and see any of my family for Christmas. And because of the existing restrictions on gathering, I won't be able to see anybody at all. I'll have to be completely alone.
That's a so close but so far away thing. Have you ever had to miss a Christmas before, Kyla?
I've had to spend one in Alberta with my family on that side of the family, but my family here, we have very, very, very big Christmas traditions, and the idea of having to miss even just seeing people at Christmas is breaking my heart.
Did you actually cry over this yesterday?
Oh, no.
Oh, from like 11:30 yesterday morning when John Horgan said that this was coming to when I fell asleep. I was basically in tears all day.
You know, you've had a rough year because you got COVID too. How's that going?
I'm doing okay. I've had some flare-ups of symptoms. I've got the whole long hauler thing happening, but you know, it's just trying to take care of myself. Stressful situations like this do not help. Hearing that people are not following the restrictions and the guidelines doesn't help.
And you know, it's really tough for single people too, because your bubble is super, super small. Tell us about your pandemic bubble.
My pandemic bubble is my colleague, Paul Doroshenko. I don't have a choice because we have a lengthy trial coming up where we're going to have to be in very close proximity for a long period of time. We're going to be working together, you know, outside of court hours as well, preparing for each day. I don't have the luxury of being able to have one or two friends. I have to just have a colleague because of the nature of my job.
Oh, my bubble just went down to zero too, because my best friend, she was too social. She got a little too drunk and got a little too social. So like, I'm sorry, we just can't hang out anymore, which really sucks. So I feel you, Kyla. But are you going to try and substitute Christmas somehow? I know you're by yourself, but do you have any thoughts or anything you're going to do?
Right now, I'm thinking of maybe dressing up my dog in some type of Christmas costume I order on Amazon, because that will bring me joy.
That will, yes.
You know, there are some people, and I saw some of the replies to your tweet, and I mean, the odd person kind of was saying, suck it up, it's only one Christmas. How do you react to that?
You know, it is only one Christmas, but my grandmother is very old. You know, I was hoping to at least be able to see her from a distance. She still lives independently. We lost our grandfather 2 years ago, so this is only her second Christmas without him. And our family is very, very, very tight-knit. So, you know, to me, this is my everything holiday. And to her, it's her everything holiday. And it's already going to be different. And it's made worse now by the fact that you know, I can't be there. And other members of our family likely won't be able to be there either.
I don't think that suck it up is fair in situations like this, because you're not complaining. You're just like, this is tough. This is tough. We're all going through this. So I don't think that's fair at all.
I don't understand why I'm not allowed a little bit of self-pity.
Well, like, that
I've been following the restrictions. I deserve to complain once in a while.
Wallow in it, Kyla.
Yes.
I mean, 2020's been a crappy year. And I don't know. The only person who's maybe happy about it is the person who's making those, you know, face masks or rubber gloves or whatever, going, yoo-hoo.
Yeah.
The plexiglass people.
But even they're alone in their houses too, so maybe not even them.
Cuddling their, you know, masks.
Their money.
their money. Yeah. Shaking their bags of coins.
That's right.
I mean, I said the other day to some girlfriends, we were talking about this, and I said, you know, our generation, literally anyone who's alive right now, 20 years from now, if there's a pandemic baby born, they'll say, what was the great pandemic of 2020?
Right.
It'll just be so foreign to them.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a part of living history that we're unfortunately all a part of. And, you know, you have the health issues to deal with. Would you consider yourself to be a COVID long hauler, given the symptoms are lagging?
I think so, yes. I think I meet the sort of criteria that seems to be evolving for that.
Well, you know what we need to do is we need to figure out a way that all the single people,
all the single people.
Oh, no, you went straight to Beyonce.
I went Beyonce, of course. Queen B.
Can find a way to have some giant Zoom where everybody's drinking champagne or, I don't know, something.
Well, I'll be drinking alone no matter what.
Well, there you go. Kyla, I think Eric is free on Christmas Day.
We can have a Zoom.
You could talk
Christmas
to each other having a beer or something.
I'll be very drunk that day.
Works for me.
Okay. Maybe we need to play the song again. Do you want to play the song again for Kyla to
sure. Hold
make
on.
Her
just
feel
give
better?
Me one sec. Here we go. Here you go, Kyla. This one's for you.
The Linda Steele Show continues on 980 CKNW.
Everybody sing along.
I saw her in a courtroom in Abbotsford.
Come on, Amir, you can sing.
Defends
people
sing.
That need some help from a lawyer.
There it is.
A DUI lawyer. Oh,
yeah. Come on, Kyla, sing with us.
Probably win your court case, but not for
I don't know the words
I don't
either.
Know
unless
the words.
My lawyer's present, don't talk to me.
Here we go.
Her name is Kyla.
K-Y-L-A, Kyla. Are you feeling any better, Kyla?
Yes, I'm smiling. Thank you.
Merry Christmas early, and I hope these darn travel restrictions are lifted so you can have Christmas with your family, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Kyla. That's Kyla Lee, a lawyer at Acumen Law.
Yeah, that's tough.
It is sad. I may be spending Christmas with Norm, my bubble of
your,
Norm.
Your bubble
we have a caller
bubble.
Actually that might provide a silver lining to Kyla as well.
Oh,
possibly.
Okay, Steve in Coquitlam. Hi, Steve.
Hey,
how you doing? I'm a first time caller. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah, it's great. Great shows. Love your shows.
You're all echoey. Are you listening to the radio in the background?
Let me turn it down.
Please do. Yeah.
Sorry about that. How's that?
Hey, that's great. So, do you have some upside to travel restrictions?
Oh yeah, it's great. You know what? I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be me and the wife, no relatives. I get on my nerves every year. You know what I mean? I'm sure everybody experiences that. I can like not worry about. I can have quite a few drinks and not worry about driving. It'll be nice and quiet. I'm fine with it. This is going to be great. It's going to be really, really nice.
No great big dishes to have to do after a big family dinner. And it's like everybody go home already, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? We're going to make our own. You know, just a small one. Me and the wife, you know what I mean? Just do our own thing. And it's going to be nice. You know what? I'm really looking forward to it.
I love that, Steve. Wow. A merry early Christmas to you. And thanks for listening. And thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take care. All the best.
You too, Steve in Coquitlam. Well, let's hear some other people's opinions on this. 604-280-9898. Are you thinking, yes, like Steve, this is going to be awesome?
Well, to Steve's one point, my family wants fought over Hitler and we all left the dinner table at Christmas once. So for that part of it, I feel that part of it, like the crazy arguments. But even me, I'm like, you know, I'm not a big Christmas, even this year, I'm like, I would like to see someone. So hopefully me and Kyla can Zoom together maybe.
Can I, you know...
You get Norm on there.
Well, you know,
get him to Windex the screen so we can see everything clearly.
I was going to say, I'm going to be even more kind of sad because it's my birthday on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah.
And two friends of mine were going to take me out for an early birthday next weekend.
Yeah.
That's off.
Oh, no.
Oh, COVID, you crappy virus that's ruining Christmas.
You jerk, COVID,
Oh, hate your guts. Vanessa in Abbotsford, tell us how COVID is affecting Christmas.
Well, so I live in Abbotsford. My parents and my sister all live in New West. And every Christmas Eve, we tend to throw this large open house bash for the family. My mom comes from a family of seven. My dad comes from a family of seven as well.
Wow.
And you know, like my aunts, my uncles and my cousins all come over, friends and family, and everyone talks about it every year. Like my cousin even brought up, oh hey, like, you know, looking forward to next year already, like this kind of thing. And to be honest, my cousin, she was just tested positive for COVID.
Aww.
And she actually works in the Surrey Memorial Hospital as a nurse.
Yeah.
And so now she's all, you know, quarantining at her house right now. And so it's just like, it just kind of puts into reality. And then my mom starts crying and I'm just like, hey, you know what? This is just 1 year. It's a blip in our whole life. You know, it's just temporary. It's just for now. It's not forever. And let's just get through this, you know, one day at a time as it comes.
Good attitude, Vanessa. Thank you so much for calling in. And
can't be easy, no matter even with that attitude.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Happy early Christmas. It's not forever, but it sure freaking feels like it's forever, doesn't it?
Yes.
We've been in this pandemic for 10 years, it feels like. Hi, Lindsay in Richmond. So you're a single as well?
Yeah. I have a very small bubble of my parents and my coworker, who is quite a bit younger than me. He falls into the, I'm tired of COVID, I wish it would go away, I don't wear a mask unless I have to kind of group.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, which makes me really nervous because I'm immune compromised and my parents are as well. But I work in an industry that is considered essential services.
What do you do?
And so I work for a plumbing company.
Oh, well, plumbing is essential. Mm-hmm. And it's National Toilet Day today,
right,
I think.
It's National Toilet Day.
Or International Toilet Day. So, Lindsay, again, Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah.
I hope that it's not going to be too lonely.
Well, I'm hoping that the restrictions will lift, so at least I can see my parents for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a sister and a brother-in-law and a niece in Port Moody that we don't know if we're going to see them or not.
Yeah, it's a crappy year. Thank you so much for calling in. You know what? That was sad. As we laugh. Not her. I mean the whole thing.
Bitter. Like, what else can you do, Linda? You got to laugh at this point. Yeah.
Ah, it's almost Christmas. Okay, let's turn to talking about CERB. Everybody likes to talk about CERB.
Yes, yes.
Did you claim CERB when you knew you weren't eligible? Come on. Don't be shy. Eric, you know how we were talking yesterday, I think, earlier this week,
about
the number of people who might have committed fraud by applying for CERB when they weren't eligible, and we never really knew. I mean, how many people was it? Was it just a few people?
Right. Was it half of the applications?
2,000.
Right.
You know, we knew the numbers didn't add up. Well, now we have some new numbers, and I think you're going to be pretty surprised. And these numbers dug up by the hardest working guy in the journalism business.
One of the best.
Tom Korski, who is the managing editor of Blacklock's Reporter. Tom, I so appreciate you doing this late hit with us. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
So we're getting a better idea, finally, or you are anyway, of how many Canadians maybe got CERB who didn't qualify.
Remember this number, 824,000. You know, when they passed that bill, Linda, it was to help workers. This is the language of the bill. Help workers who had employment income before but didn't have now because they were jobless and had made a few thousand dollars at least in the previous 12 months.
Right.
Tax filers. Well. The feds in an inquiry ministry table in the House of Commons, that's just a document, says 824,000 people who did not file a tax return claimed the CERB. Now, that can only mean I punched in my social insurance number on a federal website, and it was like a game show. I got my $2,000. You know, there are MPs who have asked for audits of this program. It went three times over budget. You know, the CERB wound up costing $82 billion, three times what it was budgeted at. That's three times the national defense budget, $82 billion. MPs want audits. They want to know where the money went because they say today, you know, we voted for people, taxpayers, who were losing their jobs, could lose their homes. They're the ones who needed the help.
How much money in CERB checks did these people get that they were, by the sounds of it, not eligible for?
The ones who didn't bother filing taxes. If you just assume they took the one check for $2,000, you're talking almost $2 billion.
Oh, my God.
$2 billion, borrowed dollars that we will pay interest on for the next 20 years.
Oh, okay, well, let me ask you this. What exactly did the federal government or Revenue Canada or whoever, what did they do to try to verify people's eligibility?
They did nothing. They asked you for your social insurance number, and that was it. Only after the fact, and CERB has run its course now, it was replaced by other programs. Linda, they never did it again. Now they asked for checkbox attestation. That is, you swear essentially an oath that I'm telling the truth. Subject to verification. You know, this bill passed the House of Commons 2 weeks after the outbreak of the pandemic. MPs debated it for a matter of a few hours. Let's be frank, this was a shotgun bill, and Cabinet didn't do a great job. This was not a carefully crafted bill that was thinking of protecting taxpayers' dollars. What was the effect? It went grossly over budget. There were claims made by people that, for some reason, inexplicably, Cabinet will not admit, had no business claiming this money. It was not a mistake. It was free money on the table, and they took it, and everyone is going to pay for it.
Well, and here's the other thing. In your story, I was thinking, what? The CERB was supposed to be for people who were desperate, who had no money, who needed to pay the rent and put food on the table. And in fact, it turns out that thousands of people made a whole whack of money last year and still applied for CERB.
It's interesting. There were tens of thousands of people who had six-figure incomes in 2019 and said they had no income in 2020 when they applied. This is interesting. Who would those people be? Well, they could be, indeed, very high executives who suddenly faced unemployment. What is more likely is they were sole proprietors, consultants, own their own business, pay themselves through dividends. You know, this is the beauty. When you pay yourself with a dividend, you can always lower that dividend to nothing. So you can report no income in the period when you're claiming this pandemic relief. You know, Linda, there was so much money spent. The federal debt is up to $1.4 trillion this year. So many billions went out the door. And the audits will be mind-blowing when we finally get them, but sadly, that will be next year.
One of my colleagues said a guy that he knew who got his CERB spent his entire check on pot every month and was just having a grand old time enjoying it. What does the revenue agency say about this?
Well, the revenue agency quibbles with what the criteria were, but you know, your pot-smoking acquaintance outsmarted the Canada Revenue Agency. How many people can really say that? You know, there were MPs, this is quite poignant, there were MPs who went into the House of Commons who accepted that this was for tax filers who were facing hardship. There was an MP from Quebec, Christine Norman, and she went into the Commons, Linda, and she said, I have MPs, constituents, they are hard-pressed. They didn't file a tax return last year. They're up against it. And how do they prove that they qualified? Prime Minister said, quote, unquote, those would be extraordinary or unusual requests. Our government continues its fight against tax evasion. The pot smokers outsmarted them all.
How confident are you that this $2 billion is going to be clawed back by the government?
Very difficult if they don't file taxes. Presumably, yeah, but who would be a worker with employment income of at least $5,000 but didn't file a tax return? Well, the obvious scenario that presents itself would be the 16-year-old who's living at home with his folks. You know, I hope that there was some age verification. I haven't an inkling, and there are suspicions, there was a large number of high schoolers who, like your friend, outsmarted the big machine, the Canada Revenue Agency.
Hey, I mean, what's the difference for a couple of billion if we're $1.4 trillion in debt, right?
Yeah, you know, though, the kids get to pay for it. I'll be dead. But they get to pay for it in 2050. And I hope they remember their summer of love in 2020 because they're going to be paying the interest the rest of their working lives, Linda.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the honest truth. Tom Korski, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
Tom Korski, managing editor of BlackLock's Reporter. We have a couple of people who are calling in on this. Let's start with Ken in Surrey. Ken, tell me what you think.
Yeah, you know, great insight. Obviously, with any sort of system, you're going to get abuse.
Are you still there? I missed that.
Yep. Start again. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah,
obviously, these programs have abuse. Every man-made system has a percentage of abuse. How much more than the normal is this? We don't know. I'm in the travel industry. I make six-figure income, and I went to zero in March. And so I'm one of those people who I actually created a new company, so I only qualified for CERB for 2 months. But, you know, I didn't have my tax return done at the time and wasn't able to because I'm immune compromised. So I'm one of those that actually is totally legit and needed it. But at the same time, you know, we have to have civil rest, and I think that part of that was allocated towards, you know, knowing that that's what the cost was going to be for civil rest in the country.
Mm-hmm. Ken, thanks for calling in. I guess we'll find out, or maybe we won't.
I don't know.
That's a lot of money, $2 billion. Thank you for listening to the Linda Steele Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. And join the conversation. You can reach me on Twitter at Steele Talk, on Facebook, and by email, linda@cknw.com. Talk to you next time.